A few minutes after 1 o'clock. Okay, next speaker is Don Hornishmeyer, then Bridget Hoover, then Nancy Isaacson. Oh, yes. Is there anybody in the audience that, and I don't know if you've seen the list, but it's all alphabetized. I have had a request for someone whose name begins with Z to speak out of order because he needs to be somewhere by 1:30 or 2. So if there's anybody that feels that they're not going to have time if they wait to get their comments in, I would consider taking you out of order at this time. Okay, why don't you come forward?
I am reading the letter from Dr. Don Hornishmeyer. I believe you have the spelling over there. My name is Priscilla Aiken from the local. Anyway, I'm from the local Unitarian Universalist congregation. Dr. Hornishmeyer is from the Aptos congregation and was not able to get down here.
Okay. Do we need to have her spell the name, or do you have the list?
We got it ahead of time.
Okay.
No. Members of the Central Coast Regional Board, as a concerned citizen, writer on the health hazards from water pollution, and as a citizen concerned with the health of every person, especially children, and the health of sea otters and marine mammals in our area, I want to urge you to institute effective regulation of hazardous runoff from agricultural fields. Many farmers want to take actions to minimize runoff of fertilizers and pesticides from their fields, and that is commendable. However, history has shown that self-regulation is very slow and usually not effective. Pollution regulations with clear enforcement actions are required to protect the health of our rivers, ocean, and aquifers, and ultimately the health of the people. Of course, the regulations must be feasible and reasonable. The proper role of the farmers of the area is to speak to these issues. I urge you to enact regulations that address every water pollutant known to occur in the Salinas Valley. This should certainly include toxic pesticides such as chlorpyrifos and endosulfan, which are being banned in Europe, and the fungicide and carcinogen Captan, of which 300,000 pounds were applied to crops in this region in 2009. Thank you for your consideration, Don Hornishmeyer.
Thank you for your comments.
Excuse me.
Ma'am?
I realize that she's got Don's name, but I don't know if she caught your name.
So. No, I'm Priscilla Aiken, last name spelled A-K-I-N.
Thank you.
And, sir, come forward, and you must be at the bottom of my card list.
Yes.
There it is. Dr. Lowell Zielinski?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I'm Dr. Lowell Zielinski, Z-E-L-I-N-S-K-I. And I have a PhD in soil plant water relations from the University of California, Davis. And I'm a member of the San Luis Obispo County Water Resources Advisory Committee, as well as owning a small company that does irrigation and fertility consulting in both Monterey County and in Paso Robles. I want to commend the staff for responding to a lot of questions I had submitted in the past, and they did clarify a number of issues that I had. There are still some other ones. But what I am most concerned about is the nitrogen use efficiency requirements. You can only put on a ratio of 1 pound of N per pound of N removed. Part of my PhD dissertation was looking at nitrogen uptake efficiency in cotton, and we used labeled nitrogen so we could track how much was taken up. The best we could ever do was recover 50% of the nitrogen we applied in the whole plant that we analyzed. So a number of speakers have spoken about this, about how it would be difficult to obtain that one-to-one relationship, and I think it's impossible without suffering yield losses. The plants are just not that efficient in taking up nitrogen. Okay. Additionally, I wonder, I'm sure the board is aware, but I'd like to reiterate that the vegetable growers in the Salinas Valley plant a number of crops a number of times a year and in small blocks within within larger fields. And if they're required to prepare a nutrient budget for each one of those plantings, there would be potentially tens of thousands of nutrient budgets that needed to be submitted. Because they'll plant a three-acre block of lettuce, and 2 weeks later they'll plant another three-acre block, and 2 weeks later they'll plant another three-acre block. So I just want to make sure that that was clear. One other thing I want to mention is that one of the questions I did submit to staff was, does the incidence of methemoglobinemia in Monterey County support the contention that a lot of people are drinking high nitrate waters? And the response was, no, it does not. So that's all my comments. Thank you.
So just a follow-up question for you. So what you're saying is that you have to over-fertilize because, at least with your experience with cotton, it's not very efficient in taking up nitrogen.
Right.
And the only way to even get that 50% into it is with an over application.
Yes, because the fate of nitrogen, where it goes, isn't always taken up by the plant. Some of it volatilizes into the atmosphere as ammonia gas or other things, or urea. So there's lots of other sinks or ways the nitrogen can leave the system. And like I say, it's complex. If you make the nitrogen fertilizer requirement equal to the amount of nitrogen removed, have you considered the amount of nitrogen in the water that was being applied with the irrigation? And then additionally, you can, if you put on 50 pounds of nitrogen, you can pollute more with that 50-pound addition than with a 200-pound addition, depending on the timing and the method of application. So I think it's not as simple as you would think as just putting on what the crop needs. There's much more to nitrogen management than that. So.
Okay, thank you for your comments.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Bridget Hoover?
She sent a note saying that she would not be able to attend.
Okay. Nancy Isaacson, and then Christine Kemp.
Let's see, I prepared a PowerPoint. I need the little. Okay. Nancy Isaacson, IS, this is Sam, AKSON, and I'm here as president of the Salinas Valley Water Coalition. And I have prepared a PowerPoint, but I just want to summarize some things for you. Hope I do this right. There we go. Salinas Valley Water Coalition is a not-for-profit organization comprised of agricultural landowners, farmers, businesses within the Salinas Valley. Our mission statement includes the statement of that the management of the Salinas River Basin should be based on a scientific basis, comply with all laws, regulations, and promote the accountability of governing agencies. And that's how we've operated for 20 years, and we continue to operate. Based on that, we'd retained the services of a law firm, Horan Lloyd Carr Hawley, and we also retained the services of a hydrologist who our chair will speak to later. I'm going to address the legal issues, and again, I'm just going to summarize, but we believe that the proposed order oversteps the boundary of the legislative authority granted to you and imposes duplicative regulations, violates the equal protection clauses of the United States and California Constitution, and fails to protect farmers' proprietary rights. For these reasons, and really it tracks with what Mr. Hard said earlier, the Salinas Valley Water Coalition requests that the board reject the proposed order. We think you need to step back and start over. So I'm going to move through. We believe the order oversteps the limited authority granted to you through the California Water Code and that jurisdiction to implement and enforce some of these regulations have actually been granted to the Monterey County Water Resource Agency. I'm sorry, I see this is going to go through time. So I'm going to summarize this, that specific to nitrate concerns, The Monterey County Health Department and Monterey County Water Resource Agency have programs in place to address the nitrates in the groundwater. They've done this for years, and we ask that you let the local agencies work with a local solution. Again, we believe that the order provides a duplicative layer. It oversteps your authority, and we think we do need to step back. And I hate to say start over, but we need to look at, as Mr. Hart said, what is the problem and how do we best address that solution. Again, our chair, Mr. Roberts, will address it from a hydrologic point because we believe that that's what you need to do. Thank you. I don't know how to stop that. Apologize.
Thank you for your comments. Ms. Isaacson, just a question for you. Does the Monterey County Water Resources Agency have any program to address nitrate in groundwater?
I believe they do. I believe, I thought I heard Curtis Weeks address this board last, not in March, but the time before in Watsonville, and I thought he had discussed that specifically. I know they do, they have a committee. I'm not part of that water committee, but there may be some people here in the room that are. But Kathy Thomasberg with the water agency oversees that as a staff person.
Okay. But other than what you heard Mr. Weeks say, and I think it was up in Watsonville, and I don't think it was this last month.
No, I think it was the time before.
It was before in July, probably,
right.
2010.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of anything other than his comments that he made?
No. Oh, I know that there have been programs. I mean,
I
couldn't tell you what the specific are, but I've have monitored the water agency, the water resource agency, and their activity. I know that they do have programs. I couldn't tell you specifically what they are.
Okay, but these are programs for nitrate.
Yes, and they have a groundwater monitoring system in place to monitor nitrates.
I'm aware of the all the data they've produced, but I wasn't aware that they had a program to address the nitrate.
It's my understanding that they do have a program. They work with the growers. There's a AWAC committee.
And do you know if the program has been successful?
I believe that it has shown certain trends to reducing nitrates, yes.
Oh, okay.
In the groundwater.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your comments.
Sorry. Thank you.
Christine Kemp, followed by Carrie Lobel, and then Mark.
Los Huertos.
Los Muertos. Muertos or Huertos?
Huertos, right.
Muertos, okay. I hope it's not Muertos because I think that has to do with death.
That's Muertos.
Muertos, okay. Ms. Kemp.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Christine Kemp, K-E-M-P. I'm an attorney with a law firm of Noland, Hammerly, Etienne, and Haas in Salinas. We represent several many agricultural clients, and I'm here to speak on their behalf. I wanted to address two specific issues, and particularly related to the one-size-fits-all nature of the waiver. And with respect to the 100 within 100 feet of surface water or adjacent to surface water, that definition needs to be clarified because you have agricultural fields that may be adjacent to surface water within 1,000 feet, but it doesn't account for levees, which we saw just driving down today. You have a levee, you have an agricultural field, the water's not running into the water body, but they're still subject to the tiering criteria. You also have leveling of agricultural fields, laser leveling, where the drainage may be away from the water body, but again, those requirements are not being taken into consideration. An adjunct to that is the requirement of the buffers. This is problematic for many reasons, and you heard some of that today. It removes agricultural land from production, and for some small farms, that can be a significant loss of their productivity and their ability to farm their land. It does conflict with the food safety, not necessarily regulations, but the agreements, the leafy green management agreements that have been put in place, and those are self-regulated agreements amongst the farmers to address a problem that arose out of the spinach and the E. coli problem. So it, and federal legislation may be coming to implement those. So those are self-imposed regulations that the farmers are attempting to deal with a problem which arose and are regulating it. So if you require buffers and then they can't have buffers because other folks don't want it, you have a conflict. And there are other ways, proven ways, to reduce the runoff sediment and pesticide levels using the folicating agents and the degradative enzymes. And those alternatives ought to be put in place as well as just requiring standard buffers. So we're asking that alternative methods that are an important component of the mitigation measures, and those alternative methods need to be permitted under the waiver. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay. Carrie Lovell.
I'm here to read a statement on her behalf.
Oh, fine.
As I
okay.
mentioned earlier.
And your name?
My name is Dipti Bhatnagar. Last name B for Bombay, HATNAGAR.
Okay. And you're reading this for which organization?
For Puente de la Costa Sur. And the person is Carrie Lobel. She's the executive director.
Okay.
She submitted a
That's fine.
Letter. Okay. Dear members of the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, thank you for the opportunity to present written remarks. I regret that I am unable to join you in San Luis Obispo today. I write today on behalf of Puente de la Costa Sur. Puente is a 10-year-old 501c3 nonprofit organization. Its mission is to provide vital services for men, women, and children and families living in rural San Mateo South Coast communities of Pescadero, La Honda, Loma Mar, and San Gregorio. Puente reaches residents on the south coast of San Mateo County, the most rural area in the Greater Bay Area, or Puente service area. It covers about 160 mostly undeveloped square miles, including the unincorporated areas of Pescadero, San Gregorio, La Honda, and Loma Mar. The four communities have no dental or medical providers, pharmacies, laundromats, department or hardware stores, libraries, or supermarkets. Members of this board are no stranger to the challenges that nitrates in water have brought to our community. Last spring, problems at Marchi Farms came to public attention when water tests revealed the presence of nitrates at 6 times the federal limit. Residents at the farm had been drinking bottled water at their own cost for more than a decade, and health inspection reports had cited problems dating from at least 2004. A likely source of the nitrate contamination was fertilizer application adjacent to the well. Many residents of our region live in shared housing adjacent to fields that are in production for food or flowers. Because our community has no health care, it is impossible for us to measure the health burdens that may be placed on babies, infants, and the elderly from nitrate contamination. However, we find the health data troubling. Nearly all of us in our community rely on wells for water for our drinking, cooking, and bathing. We also rely on agriculture and floriculture to sustain our rural community. Surely, clean water and agriculture can live side by side. Carrie Lobel, Executive Director.
Thank you very much for your comments. Okay.
I'm hoping you said Mark Los Huertos.
Yes.
Okay.
And you can spell can spell that for us. And
who am I talking to?
He's on the list.
Yeah, Ariana Martin, and then Mibs McCarthy.
Los Huertos, L-O-S, capital H-U-E-R-T-O-S.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I'm a faculty member at Cal State Monterey Bay. I've been working on water quality issues in farming for over 15 years, mostly on nitrogen, biogeochemistry issues, groundwater and surface water contamination, as well as best management practices. And there's a couple comments I want to make. I unfortunately haven't had time to boil all my ideas down into something that lasts only 3 minutes, but I'll do my best here. One of the issues that I want to raise is that in general, I found that the tiering system does not relate to water quality risks. And I thought this was ironic because in Watsonville, both environmental and farming communities felt that the tiering system wasn't related to risk. And let me just sort of back up a little bit. On a lot of what I've read in mostly national and international papers on non-point source pollution, there's generally a correlation between land use and management practices and water quality. The problem is when you apply it to a farming community, the correlation then turns into an assumed causation. And just to highlight this in statistical terms, and I don't want to belabor this, but a correlation of 0.6, which is really good in sort of environmental sciences, turns into a R squared of 0.36, which translates to 36% of the variance is covered by that that correlative relationship. But that means 64% is not related. And so in theory, with a very good R statistic of 0.6, you could be misapplying the mechanisms of water quality impairment up to 74% of the population. Hope that makes sense. So I also did a lot of research on vegetative buffer strips for my dissertation, and I found that vegetative buffer strips actually are very problematic in California because of a Mediterranean climate. In particular, we don't have a good biogeochemical context to remove the nitrogen using denitrification in a Mediterranean climate because of the dry season from March-ish till November. So applying vegetative buffer strips wholesale as a potential best management practice to remove nitrate, and I'm just speaking for nitrate, is I would say a misapplication of that best management practice. And the last thing I just want to say is that I, on some level, feel like the mechanism of pollution generally takes place through a watershed or water course. And I didn't see an explicit linkage to the mechanisms of water impairment through the ag waiver through watershed processes. And that the one thing I have to admit I like about the ag proposal is that it does address at least potential address of, sorry, I'm out of time. Okay.
Why don't you finish your sentence?
Oh, okay.
You get to finish the sentence, okay. Even if it's a long one.
I have a lot of commas.
Well, just the sentence. Okay. One sentence.
So the linkage in the ag proposal to watersheds and allowing watershed working groups to be able to develop monitoring plans within the watershed is very attractive because then you allow watershed groups to set standards, set targets, and potentially set targets in with response and with approval to the board so that the people on the ground can make appropriate timelines and targets. So I know in San Juan Valley, Mary Ellen Dick has worked very hard with those growers. They have a very good idea. That's more than a sentence. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That was a creative run-on sentence.
Mr. Jeffries.
I liked, he started addressing San Juan Valley. I'd like to hear the rest of that. Because there's some real critical issues in the San Juan Basin.
Yes. It's hard to ignore the red light on me. But so San Juan Valley is very problematic. It's got, on the east side of the valley, relatively well-drained soils. On the west side, very poorly drained soils. And the poorly drained soils have a high percentage of tile drains. Those tile drains and a relatively high water table and increasing water table have very high nitrate concentrations, not just in the tiles, but in the surface water. So I've been monitoring San Juan Creek for almost 10 years, and the concentrations are generally in the 40s to 50s, sometimes 60s parts per million as N. And to address that, the nitrate issues on the San Juan Valley are a little bit odd because you don't think of that part of the county as a high ag area. It turns out San Juan has the highest yields of the Central Coast ahead of Monterey for decades. And so it's this very interesting area. It's a perfect microclimate. unfortunately, they have imported water. The imported water has raised the water table. Raising the water table has forced growers to increase the tile drainage. Their aquifer is relatively salty, so they can't even use their aquifer water. So they're creating a system where they've got too much water, a lot of nitrate because of the high production value crops that they're using. And to turn it back to Mary Ellen Dick, Mary Ellen Dick's been working with these growers very, very successfully to start installing best management practices. So, for example, I've worked with a grower testing vegetative buffer, treatment wetlands to remove the nitrate using basically plants and microbial processes to remove the nitrate. And that's been pilot projects right now, and to tell you the truth, we haven't got it figured out because we got so much water moving through these systems that we can reduce the nitrate 1 or 2 or 3 parts per million, but when you're starting with 40 or 50 parts per million, which aren't even that grower's nitrate, it's going to take a long time for us to figure out how to fix that issue. But the nice thing is that now we have on-the-ground experience with those growers. We have a watershed coordinator that's well adept at dealing with these growers, and we can come up with targets and say ANZAR is our monitoring station, and the growers can come up with a watershed group to monitor a whole bunch of sub-watersheds or sub-basins or growers, and then be able to use that data to modify individual farming practices that would show up on a CMP site probably in 3 to 5 to 10 years. And I would say that CMP sites were designed to see long-term trends. So I'm not surprised, actually, when I actually helped design this, the monitoring plan for the CMPs. I was not expecting to see changes in the CMP sites for at least 5 to 10 years.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dr. Hunter.
Hold on.
So the work that you've been involved with in a lot of the cooperative work going on between the farm community and scientists and some of the technical assistance that's available, do you think that under the ag order we wouldn't be able to see that continued kind of collaboration on developing BMPs, because the program is not intended to be prescriptive? So why would we not see that continued level of effort, the support from the RCDs and funding from NRCS, et cetera? I just want to know where that linkage gets broken
by
regulations.
I hope I didn't say that linkage was automatically broken, but I have seen some breakdowns in the linkage. Not at part of this board at all, but the Department of Financial Assistance, is that what they're called, DFA, have come up with some fairly strict rules on reporting requirements when we get state funding from the Water Board, which has made it very, what's a good word for it, hesitant for growers to participate in at least state water-funded cooperative products. And a lot of that money goes through the RCDs or Cal State Monterey Bay or even University of California. So it's been very hard for us to get grower cooperators knowing that the data is going to be reported into a public database. And then potentially in 3 to 5 years, someone turns around and starts suing them for water quality impairments that they're actually trying to fix. So that's part of it. The other part of it is that it's not clear, and I think your staff has done a very put a lot of effort and have done a very good job trying to come up with some approaches on it, on frankly something that no state, no national agency, national water protection agency has done successfully. I also co-wrote a paper with Daniel Press, former board member, and Brian Dowd on the Ag Waiver Program, so I'm fairly familiar with what else has been done around the country. So the way the Ag Waiver is written, if you're in a Tier 2 or Tier 3 or Tier 1, developing those management practices has the potential, or cooperating with funding that might be linking your data to a state water database has the potential of refining or changing those tier criteria, and growers, I think, would get really nervous about if they're bumped from one tier to another based on the data that they're collecting, based on their cooperation that they're hoping to improve water quality. So I think it's a frustration that potential cooperation will then come back and haunt them in 3 to 5 or 10 years in a way that they didn't really anticipate. So I think you're finding growers at least in terms of my case, we've got a Prop 84 grant. I can't find growers to cooperate at all because they are scared to death that somehow in 3 to 5 years a new ag order will turn around and then that data will get used to, I don't mean to hunt them down, but to create the more difficult circumstance than they're already facing. Does that make sense?
I've got some questions for you. With respect to the first part of what you were telling us about with risk factors.
Oh, yeah.
And the tiering.
Yeah.
You're familiar then with all the risk factors that staff has used to create the tiers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that any of those risk factors are inappropriate?
Mm-hmm.
Which ones?
Well, I'm not a risk analyst, but I taught myself to do risk analysis about 3 weeks ago after I started reading the report. And some of the things I found that was proximity to
a 303 delisted body
is problematic just in terms of landscape processes. So, and two speakers ago brought this up. If you're next to a levee, then you're next to a 303 delisted body, but your water doesn't go through the levee into that water body. So, for example, the Pajaro River is polluted above Chittenden in Santa Clara and San Benito County. Meanwhile, all the growers in the Pajaro Valley that are adjacent to the Pajaro River aren't contributing to the Pajaro River, yet they might be captured within that. I've monitored organic farms that are 500 acres that have tons of nitrate coming off of them, and I've monitored huge farms with no nitrate coming off of them. And so, again, the size criteria is a little weird for me because it doesn't link to the impairment issue directly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
The pesticides. I don't know a lot about pesticides, but let me finish this little train and I'll come back to that. The other issue is when I speak to people about those processes that drive, for example, groundwater contamination, nitrate contamination, it's soils, it's the geologic formations underneath of how you're connected to the aquifer and things like that. It's irrigation management and fertility management. When you can't do anything about where you are, you can't do anything about the aquifer, you can't do anything about the aquicludes or the confining layers, but you can do a lot with the management of the farm in terms of irrigation and fertility. And currently, and I'm not going to be a friend to anybody today, currently you drive the Salinas Valley at night and there are people driving up and down the valley turning on and off sprinklers, probably 10, 12, 14 bucks an hour. And if they can't make it back in time, the obvious thing is leave it on because you don't want to under-irrigate because the crop will look really bad and someone will see that in the daytime. So we did some monitoring for the follow-up program for the CMP where we put automatic gauges so that it would measure day and night for basically, I think we did like a week or something. I can't remember how long the sampling was. But a couple weeks, and we saw huge amounts of flow in some watersheds in the middle of the night. Right, they weren't captured. And I, of course, send my staff out to sample at 2 in the afternoon. So I was missing all these big spikes. So linking the risk to the practices and the behavior would be really appropriate. And what I didn't see in the tier system was a much more focused educational component. So, for example, a much more restricted or stringent education program on certified irrigation managers where we're not paying someone 12 bucks an hour to drive up and down the valley, but paying someone 25 bucks an hour to look at Simis stations to manage the irrigation effectively so that we really have a well-trained cadre of people that really understand irrigation management in a more sophisticated way. And that it's if you can control irrigation management, fertility management with that kind of expertise, then the location kinds of things become less and less important. And that so for in terms of risk, that's where I would put my dollars in the management of behavior and people.
Well, we have the irrigation and nutrient management plan as part of Tier 3.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting that something like that be put into Tier 2?
I would say that in general, growers need to be investing more in having better and more sophisticated irrigation and fertility management. And it's been something that has been, what's a nice way of saying it? It's not been something high on the list because it's there's so many other things that are pulling at agriculture in terms of being able to make enough money to survive in the valley. So I guess what I would say is, instead of thinking about it in terms of a management plan, but creating a structure where people would be certified irrigators through the water board, and that would be the sort of the first step, so that you have people that are well-trained and required sort of certification process. Because to tell you the truth, all these irrigation management plans, I don't think the water board, the staff, is going to be able to deal with all that stuff. And it'd be better to have really well-trained people on the ground knowing what they're doing and getting paid for what they're doing and having going through a fairly rigorous certification process. Am I not making sense?
Well, you're making sense, but I just wonder if you're familiar with what's in the plan.
Yeah.
Because it says here that these plans need to be certified by professional soil scientist, professional agronomist, or crop advisor certified by the American Society of Agronomy, or similarly qualified professional. Wouldn't that incorporate, I think, what you're suggesting?
Yeah, it would.
Okay.
And I guess what I'm hesitant to do is to say, therefore, then all those plans need to get submitted to the staff. So.
Well, these actually, it says here that this stuff is, this plan is not submitted to the Central Coast Water Board.
Okay, good.
With the exception of some key elements.
Okay.
Okay.
I haven't memorized it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, I'm listening to everything and trying to qualify or figure out what I hear versus what's being submitted.
So maybe this is what I'm, but the distinction I'm trying to make is that it'd be cool if we had that kind of people running around within watersheds to kind of link the grower activities together.
Right.
Does that make more sense?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Had a question about pesticides.
Well, the use of the two pesticides, are those reasonable risk factors to use in tearing?
Yeah, I'm not qualified to talk about pesticides.
Okay.
So, thanks.
All right. Thank you. Ariana Martin, or Arion Martin, from Santa Cruz. Okay. Huh. Well, she said need to testify before 11, but of course that was last month. I don't know. Mibs McCarthy?
Yes.
Okay. Priscilla. And Priscilla Aiken?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Priscilla Aiken, A-K-I-N, reading for Mibs McCarthy. Mibs McCarthy is a member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Carmel, Monterey congregation. To Central Coast Regional Water Board, my name is Mibs McCarthy, and I am a resident of the Central Coast. I am concerned about the nitrate contamination of our groundwater for environmental, social, and economic justice reasons. Small, poor communities such as San Gerardo, which I have visited, are paying for this contamination with their health and then are also paying for replacement water. Thousands of other Central Coast residents are in the same situation. It isn't fair that the costs of treating or avoiding polluted drinking water should fall on taxpayers or consumers when the use of fertilizers and pesticides increases the farmer's profit. It seems to me that every farmer should know exactly what is in his or her runoff and should be responsible for its treatment to make it safe from contamination. It is the government's responsibility to regulate industry for the greater good. The regional board has a mandate to protect water quality for all beneficial uses. I thank the board for taking on this huge project to help our Central Coast region. The November 2010 draft proposal is so weak that it does not protect the drinking water. Please adopt the February 2010 draft and live up to your mandate. Thank you, Mibs McCarthy. And that was McCarthy.
Thank you for your comments. Susan McDonald, Kay Mercer, and Larry Meyer. Wait a minute. Larry Meyer wouldn't be here for this. All right, agenda item. Thank you for your letter.